This is a podcast. We were talking about raccoons before we got started, and I feel it necessary to share my raccoon in my attic story.
This is not a classic intro. Who are we?
I know.
We said we were going to do the intros after.
I panicked. I saw that little red flashing light, and I panicked, okay? Cut me some slack. It's Thursday. We moved into this house, and we got a dog shortly thereafter. We moved in September, got a dog in November, and then it got cold, you know, in Florida, like 40s. And middle of the night, we heard this, like, scratching coming from the ceiling. And Rhonda's like, there's something in the attic. I'm like, no, there's nothing in the attic. And then the dog is, like, up and barking at the ceiling. Crap. So I go into the garage. I think the punchline is already ruined. We already know it's a raccoon. But I go into the garage, and I pull, like, the ladder down, and I grab a flashlight and a hammer. And because I live in Florida, I'm just wearing my underpants because that's, you know, how you sleep in Florida, I guess. So I climb up into the attic with these things, flashlight and hammer.
Sorry, what did you think the hammer was for?
I wasn't sure. I just knew there was something scratching. Okay. I needed some kind of defense, and it was the first thing I saw. Like, yeah. I don't know. I needed something like to
adjust myself
in case I was attacked, like, you know, basically naked, right? And so I picked this like flashlight. I'm looking around, and then like over like a little beam, like this little raccoon face pops up, and like for a second we both froze, like. And I could tell he was thinking the exact same thing I was thinking, like, what the hell are you doing here? And so I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. So I climbed back down, and I folded the ladder up, and I left it, like, open and cracked the garage, like, 3 inches and put dog food on the floor and went back to bed. Ron is like, what did you do? I'm like, nothing.
Let it ride.
Yeah. But it was gone by morning, so I'm not sure if it went back the way it came or what. I figured out where it accessed the attic and sealed that off, the housing situation. But that's my raccoon in the attic story. I took a flashlight and a hammer and my underwear.
The story could have ended with you closing the stairs and then being like, and that's why we moved away from that house.
And that's why we don't live there anymore.
You're talking about raccoons and garbage collection devices. We weren't camping, we were glamping, because this I think was the trip when we rented a yurt for Aaron's birthday. So I was taking the trash out, and they have, you know, the trash, it's in a, you know, regular metal can. And I was taking stuff out and dumping it in the trash, and I opened the trash can, and there's a raccoon staring at me in the trash can with the lid on, just like you know, in there. He's like staring up at me, like, and I'm like, holy shit. And then I'm like, well, I have this trash in my hand that I need to throw away, and there's a raccoon here. So I guess that I'll put the trash in and then tip the can over so the raccoon can come out.
Because you still have a job to do at the end of the day. You're like, this trash needs to go in this bin.
Go somewhere.
Could he not? I'm assuming it was a male raccoon because, like, I don't know. Could he not, like, climb the trash when you put it in to get out?
It was one of those.
I would lift the lid off for sure.
It was one of those metal trash cans. Yeah. I don't think he could have, like, climbed because there wasn't anything to grab. It looked obviously like it was the way that it was positioned with, like, the hill and whatever. It was obviously easier to get in than it was to get out.
You open the lid and he's like, oh, thank God, I've been waiting for you.
Right.
Someone has finally come to rescue me.
It was like a Chewbacca moment. Like, now he's like sworn a life oath to you. So
yeah.
You notice there's like raccoons following you wherever you go.
We did have
car, they all poke their heads out from like behind the trees. Like, he's here. He's
chosen
here.
One.
It's him.
We did have a couple raccoons at the house I don't know, about a month ago, one of our cats was like staring out the window, like really intently, so there's obviously something out there and we couldn't really see it. So I turned out the lights. It was late. Everyone was in bed and we were on our way to bed, and turned out the lights. And yeah, there's two raccoons, like the cat is right here with the window and the raccoons are like right here. I mean, they're like literally like just staring at each other.
Well, do you think the raccoons are do you think they're recognizing each other as like same but different? They're being like, that cat is weird.
Well, I mean, to be fair, that particular cat of ours does kind of look raccoon-y, so I mean, it's possible.
So, there's a chance the raccoons are like, oh, that one's inside. It's stuck inside.
They also looked really young. I mean, like we've had raccoons in the neighborhood and they get pretty big, and these were smallish, like maybe like adolescent. So like it looked like they just had no fear and they're just like,
you won't hurt us. Yeah. You're like us.
You can do nothing. And I like I tried like making noise to like scare them off. And they're like
they like jingle something back at you.
What you doing?
My neighbor's lawn treatment is here. So Jude might have something to say in a minute. Just fair warning. Oh, we're now.
Yes, this is a podcast, and
did we cover that? I think we covered that already.
That's Gary.
I'm our strongest
Allison. We're on the internet at binaryjazz.us or on Twitter binaryjazz
and not Twitter
Twitter handles that are on the website.
Hey, quit. They're welcome guests.
Play it. I need more of Gary muttering inconceivable things in the background of my life.
I think so. My project manager was in a Disney hotel with her dogs yesterday for because she's in Florida. And her dogs don't travel with her often. So like her dogs are freaking out because there's people and whatever, and they're bark, 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 bark. And she's like super embarrassed about them and apologizing constantly. But at some point, and one of her dogs is named Shira, obviously.
Yes.
And she's awesome. So at some point during a call, I mean, it was an internal call. It wasn't with a client or anything, but at some point during a call, she's like, Shira, get a hold of your life.
Get a hold of your life.
That's amazing.
Wow. My cat.
I need someone to yell that at me once in a while.
Exactly, yeah.
My cat, I think we have not had Max on any calls. I think we've talked about like how he's like has Alzheimer's now and forgets like that there's people home or where the water dish is and stuff, and he meows. Yesterday it literally sounded like someone was like taking just like ringing out the cat, like I was just on an internal call as well. But it's like come on. Seriously. I threw a blanket over the dog. Now he seems fine.
The topic this week that I'm bringing to the table, and I have to admit it was a topic that I had to double check whether we had done it or not already.
Ooh.
Which is a good sign as well, because I was like, oh, we've hit the number of episodes where it's like I have to make sure that this isn't even a thing that I'm misremembering. Yeah. But the topic this week is ultra crepidarian.
I'll use it
in a sentence. We are all ultra crepidarians.
Ultra crepidarian.
Okay. Ultra.
I think it just means bipedal.
Crepid. C-R-E-P-I-D. Mm-hmm. Arian. A-R-I-A-N.
Correct. Chris wins the spelling bee.
Yay!
The spelling bee portion of Binary Jazz is now...
Can you use it in a sentence? Yes, we are all ultra crepidarian.
Well, still ultra means that spelling bee documentary where they interview the kids, and the one little girl's like, I have other hobbies other than spelling, like I'm a vegetarian and I drink coffee, and like I was like, these aren't hobbies, and also you're like 8.
Also, spelling isn't really a hobby.
Yeah.
I should put that on my resume. Not that I need a resume, but I should
spelling
put
isn't a hobby.
My hobbies are spelling. No, I mean, I do it frequently. I guess it is a hobby at this point.
But like, I also don't consider my vegetarianism a hobby. Like,
I'm
like,
no, I don't think so either. Yeah, that's not
it's a, more of a way of life.
It's just, I mean, like, it's something I do, but I'm not actively got a vegetarian today.
I need my 30 minutes of vegetarian.
Kind of practice.
Yeah.
Maybe some people do.
It's like learning to play a flute, right? Like,
yeah. You gotta log in your time.
I mean, I guess one could argue that the longer you are a practicing vegetarian, the better you are at making vegetarian food.
Yeah.
Good choices.
That's true.
But yeah, it's not a hobby.
The cooking part could be a hobby. You could be like, I excel at vegetarian cuisine or something. Yes,
that's a very valid point. Yeah. But cooking is a hobby.
Like I'm really good at making vegetarian food.
Yeah.
If you make vegetarian food, I will be the one that consumes it.
I mean, on the same.
My hobbies are condiments.
cooking is a hobby, but also not because if you don't cook, you kind of don't eat. I mean, yeah, you could like get food like takeout all the time, but then eventually, I assume you'll run out of money.
Yeah.
Unless.
Or you're like good at preparing pre-made food.
Yeah. Right.
Oof. You're like, I can defrost the hell out of that microwave dinner.
Yep.
I have a soup button on my microwave that I used for chili the last 2 days for lunch.
I never use those buttons.
Yeah, no. Most of the time they're wrong. I use the defrost button on this lentil stew that we had in the freezer that was like, you know, frozen solid, like a brick of stew, and I put it on defrost for 10 minutes because I knew that because the last time I tried to defrost something that was frozen, it like actually kind of killed the microwave, like it did a power surge. So like I knew that if I did it like for full power for an extended period of time, it would like overheat or something. So
it might be time for a new microwave. I'm just going to throw that out there.
I mean, it did come with the house and we've been here for a couple of years and wasn't the best, but whatever. I don't care. Anyway, I defrosted it for 10 minutes and it was still a brick.
You're like,
let's replace our original microwave.
And it's all about expectations.
Yeah.
Like if you're not expecting stew, if you're expecting a brick.
It's true. I could
let's
throw
back up a little,
this
though.
Through a window. This stew.
I feel like I've answered a question that I've been wondering for a long time.
What?
Is chili soup. And functionally, because I can use the soup button to rewarm chili in my microwave, it is, in fact, a soup.
No.
Chemically speaking, according to my microwave, it is.
I'm arguing with your microwave.
So you're arguing it's not a soup, it's a stew, and that's different?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
You're saying it's a stew, though.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a stew. Nor do I think it's a soup. I'm just saying that.
But isn't stew like a subset of soup?
Not.
I feel like it would be the other direction.
What's the umbrella that connects soup and stew? Is there one? Or is it completely?
The amount of liquid.
Eat it in a bowl.
So milk
I
is
eat everything in a bowl. Basically, all of our food is bowl contained.
Yeah. I'm going to have more chili today for lunch. It has nothing to do with this conversation.
It's still not
I'm
a soup.
I'm have more chili. I'm going to push the soup button, which takes 4 minutes and 25 seconds, but it like fluctuates the power level throughout.
Oh.
Like, yeah. Otherwise, I just hit the 30-second button twice for everything else I need to warm up, and then open it when I feel like it's probably warm enough. But
it's
soups.
More of a Jedi mind trick where you're like, I sense that it is done.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, soups are weird.
I heard something pop, so that probably means everything in there is getting ready to pop, you know? That bean exploded. It's probably time to get it out.
Soups are weird because if you don't cook it long enough, it'll be cold in the middle. But if you cook it too long, it's like boiling when you take it
That's
out.
That's where this button is amazing.
Yeah.
It comes out uniformly warm.
But you don't even have to stop it and stir it or something midway?
No. It just comes out ready to go. And then I throw a bunch of hot, spicy stuff in it and then some cornbread. And
why is the hot, spicy stuff not already in this chili? I'm very confused by your chili.
Yeah, so
it's a soup, and it's not spicy. Like, what's going on?
It's got a little spice, but I like it spicier. The kids don't eat like crazy spicy, yeah, so when it comes out, I could add. There's no reason I couldn't add the spice before throwing it in there. It's just it comes out, and I'm like, oh yeah, I want this to be spicier when I taste it to confirm that it's warm. So I throw chili powder in and some ghost pepper chili flakes and some. Yeah, those will light you up. You gotta be careful with those. What else do I throw in there? Something else. And a bit of cheese, cornbread. I'm going to be eating lunch when this is all over.
We got these seeds for these, like, they're Trinidadian chocolate hot peppers, and they're, like, super spicy. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what we're going to do with them. Like, we're growing them, and we're feeling very successful, but we're also just like, what are we going to do with them when they're ready? Because they're too spicy for us to eat, basically.
Could you make a jelly out of them? Like a spicy jelly?
Or is we were looking at recipes, and we've made our own hot sauce before, so we were thinking of going that route, but trying not to, like, gas ourselves out of the kitchen like we did prior.
That's
the challenge.
Yeah.
So we'll see what the weather's like.
I would like
the other thing
a
is...
photo of you wearing a gas mask in the kitchen.
I thought... Well, what did we call it? We called it pepper lung because it was just like, it was horrible. We thought it was such a great, like, group activity. And it was really fun. And, like, the hot sauce was amazing. But as far as practical, and also the pan we used to simmer the hot peppers basically made everything spicy for months afterwards.
It's amazing.
It was amazing. It was like kind of lovely, but also just like sometimes you don't want to have something be spicy.
Like these pancakes don't really need to be that spicy.
So it's like the pan just became like this is a savory meal pan.
Yeah. Not to derail the topic. Remind me what the topic is today.
Ultra crepidarian.
Or ultra crepidarianism.
That's
the act of walking on two legs.
That's the hobby. That's when you're an ultra crepidarian as a hobby. Yeah. I was going to say with your pepper problem, possible pepper problem. You can also just dry them.
That's true.
And then you can like sprinkle things and like
ever so slightly.
Which, because we have a ton of peppers. And like you, Gary, like the kids don't eat stuff that's super spicy, and we do. And we like when we got plants for the garden, we got a ton of peppers, and now they're all producing. And now we're like, oh crap, we have all these peppers that we're not going to put in everything. Because I tried putting one jalapeno in something, and like my daughter just like revolted.
Shut down.
So, and she's like a super taster anyway. Like she's like super sensitive to spicy foods. Like she'll taste spice in things that just have ginger. Really reactive.
I find ginger to be like just an offensive flavor, like spicy. I can't handle ginger. It's crazy. I don't like spicy doesn't bother me. Ginger, I'm like, oh wow, that's way over the top. It doesn't take much ginger, and I'm like, why would you do something like this?
Anyway. We have all these peppers that are just sitting there, and yeah, our plan is probably just gonna let them dry, and then we can like sprinkle them in things.
Yeah. Mm.
Like to get there's a pepper. We usually get Thai chilies, which are really spicy. Jalapenos, mm-hmm. and then there's a pepper called Satan's Kiss, which we've gotten several times. It's kind of like ball shaped.
Nice. Oh, I think cute. I've seen those. Okay. Yeah.
And there's other similar peppers to Satan's Kiss. I think the ones that we got now were not called Satan's Kiss when we got them, but they basically are the same. Pepper. I mean, it looked exactly the same, and they're super spicy. So, yeah, we also like to try like random things that sound interesting. I think that's where Satan's Kiss came. We're like, oh, that sounds cool.
That's why we bought ones called Ring of Fire. Purely,
yeah, we got Ring of Fire before. Yeah, Ring of Fires are good.
I was like, well, we're clearly getting these.
How can we not?
How could we not? Because I'm gonna just be singing the song and being annoying
exactly.
every time.
Yeah.
I water the plant.
Is there? Are peppers easy to maintain?
Yeah, fairly. Yeah. I mean,
I don't consider myself the greatest gardener, and we're working with containers as well, so we don't actually have like land.
My neighbors, our peppers, have not done well with anything.
We've always had really good luck with peppers, even when the soil was not very good. And even when other things didn't do as well. The bell peppers have always been really tricky. In fact, Aaron's like about to throw in the towel on bell peppers next year because we've tried and tried and tried. And we have bell peppers now, but they're like tiny, tiny. They're like this big, which is cool. I mean, throw it in whatever, but like it's not really enough bell pepper to like when you put it in something, I mean, they're like
super you can't thin. Stuff it. Yeah.
Yeah. There's not really enough bell pepper to do. To have to taste like a bell pepper and to be, a rewarding bell pepper. But they're
it
purple.
Doesn't feel like when we did bell peppers, it was the purple. Same thing. Where it's just like it didn't really feel like the output.
Yeah.
Matched up to had, our labor.
We had 1 year where we had bell peppers that were actually decent, and then never again. We've never had bell peppers work. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, purple.
Peppers purple. Also work for us because raccoons stay away from them, generally.
I was going to ask, are peppers good to grow because, like, wildlife is like, eh, no thanks.
Well, yeah. We're on the second floor, so our balcony is, like, a little hard for them to reach from the beginning anyway. But, but like, the random squirrel and raccoon will find its way for sure. But they tend to leave the peppers alone. Cool.
Our neighbors did a bunch of, all sorts of things. And very limited success as a result of bugs and critters and...
So our biggest problem lately, like we get critters in our garden too, but they haven't really attacked the veggies that much this year. We have like every once in a while we get like a tomato that looks like it's gotten a bite taken out of it or something.
Sorry, my bad.
Just one.
Just take
a look. Our big problem the last year or two is squash bugs. Are these bugs that like basically devour the leaves of squashes, specifically squashes and melons. So last year they basically obliterated our squashes, like almost all of them. And we couldn't, and the only way to get rid of them besides like pesticides is like, well, the only way we could figure out to get rid of them before was individually picking them off and dumping them in like soapy water because soapy water kills them. Aaron figured out recently that you can actually spray the plants with like Castile soap, and it will be okay for their plant. I mean, not great, but it'll kill the bugs or kill the eggs or whatever. And then there's also like a more heavier duty version of that that you can buy that like lasts for like a week. So when we were gone for last week, she did that before we left and then sort of does the soap spray as a daily routine. And that kind of, I mean, we have squashes this year. but we still have the bugs, but not as much as I think it's been in the past. So I think we're kind of getting that under control, but that's the big sort of pest thing that we have lately. We have a lot of stuff in our garden this year. A crap ton of tomatillos. Like, a crap ton.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting to a certain point, and then you're like, oh.
And then, like, that's a lot of tomatillos. But, I mean, like, to be fair, like, our chili recipe uses a ton of tomatillos. We just... like also uses other things like bell peppers and tomatoes and like you want to have the things in the right amount. Yeah.
Do you own a small trebuchet to get rid of some extra produce? I think that'd be a fun thing for the kids.
Well,
physics experiment. Like,
interesting.
How many blocks we can launch this thing?
Interestingly enough, the kids did actually make or at least acquire a 3D printed trebuchet. So I can honestly say that I have a small trebuchet.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like there's stuff to go.
Ultra Crepidarian is ultra as is means it comes from derives from the term derives from the word Ultron, which is obviously a giant robot.
Obviously.
So ultra comes from Ultron, also the planet Ultron where the giant robots live.
Isn't it Voltron?
Naturally. No, that, well, yes, Voltron. But...
Voltron Crepidarian.
And Crepidarian is when you are nervously stepping into a rune, you're being a Crepidarian.
Oh, you're creeping. Yeah, I thought that was part of the root there. I couldn't figure out what it was, but that makes sense.
So Ultra Crepidarian, actually Ultra Crepidarian is when you're especially nervously creeping into the room.
Introversion. Yep, you were introverted.
that definition is creepy in itself. Just like the visualization of someone like nervously creeping into a room.
Like you walk in the door and you immediately like take a like a sidestep so that the wall is immediately behind you, you know? You're not,
it feels not like the moment before a surprise party happens.
Yes. So to use it in a sentence, before the surprise party, we are all trying to be ultra crepidarian.
It doesn't roll off the tongue very well. I think I just say sneaky.
We're all trying to be sneaky.
But ultra crepidarian is like more sneaky. It's like the next level beyond sneaky.
Are either of you surprise party people? Like, would you welcome a surprise party?
Oof.
I am not, for the record.
I wouldn't be, I don't know that I'd be excited with a whole bunch of people jumping out of like the dark room and saying, surprise!
Yeah.
But
that wouldn't do it for me. Yeah. After I picked myself up off the floor.
Party that was a surprise, like a party that I did not expect there to be, would not necessarily be an unwelcome thing, assuming it wasn't like, surprise!
You don't like the jolt of it, but if someone was just like...
I don't need the jump take.
So if someone was like, we're going out to dinner, and then when you actually show up for dinner, it's really like, here's all your friends, or something, that would be...
That's fine.
Yeah.
How are we at time already?
Time flies when you're ultra crepidarian.
Exactly. So Gary, you need an ultra crepidarian meaning before we can actually get the real.
I started with it. It's bipedal. That's all it means.
Bipedal. Bipedal. Okay.
Yes. This is very simple.
He's like, don't overcomplicate this. This is not that big of a deal.
You're way overthinking this and distracted by peppers.
That's how this show rolls, though. Is
I know.
We overcomplicate it.
I don't think I did.
Today. And possibly undercomplicate it.
What is it? So, what does it mean?
So an ultra crepidarian is someone who's presumptuous and offers advice or opinions beyond their sphere of knowledge.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
That's, yeah, okay.
Sure. I've actually had a podcast about that.
It felt very apt. I feel like we are all and I wanted to say crepidatious at one point. I don't actually know if that's a...
I'd buy it.
Yeah, that sounds legit.
If you say it confidently, I'm okay.
But yeah, it works. Yeah. It comes from a story where basically this famous painter was critiqued by a cobbler for the way that he painted a foot. And the painter was basically like, you don't know what you're talking. You don't know what you're talking about. Just because you make shoes doesn't mean you can critique me on this.
I feel like
a shoemaker is a pretty cobbler, good idea.
And feet, the though. Painter's name was Crepid? I get the connection.
You're like, I guess that's the idea. So the Latin phrase is ultra crepidum, which means beyond the soul, like soul, S-O-L-E.
Oh.
So it's okay. Like
that's so good. That's so good.
So don't offer advice beyond what you don't offer advice beyond the soul, beyond what you know.
So the sneaky thing was not that far off, because if you're being ultra crepidarian, like very trepidatiously creeping into the room.
There's that root that I was trying to find. It
yeah.
was there. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew, to be fair, I knew that trepidation and crepidation were not the same thing. I just wanted to.
No, that's fair. I wasn't trying to imply you didn't. I just was trying to suggest that I couldn't fire those synapses. I was thinking about the soup button on my microwave.
So
I can't stop thinking of soup.
Yeah.
Also, I think the Allison question we might have covered in an earlier episode, but we can refresh the answers if not. I can't remember. If I can't remember the answer to the question, I figure we can re-ask.
Yeah, I don't know. So the Allison question in question. is if you were going to participate in a competitive eating contest, what type of food would you choose?
Ooh.
I was thinking about this when because I saw it come in my email, and so I've had some time to think on the question.
Strategize, yeah.
I mean, if the answer is not Dyson sphere, what are we doing?
It's not.
But Dyson. How many? You can't eat that many of them. They're just not made to.
Yeah.
Consume in a volume.
At all, the eating at all, competition.
Eating competition is whether or not you could consume it. Period.
Yeah. Okay.
I think the only thing that I would like happily eat that much of is probably like ice cream.
Oh, that's a fun answer.
Competitive ice cream eating contest. I would be there.
Yeah. And it wouldn't ruin it for you. See, that's the thing. It's just like,
the thing is, with an ice cream eating contest, you could as soon as you finish, like, you know, one of the little tubs of ice cream, you get another one that's a different flavor or something. Like, there's an infinite array of flavors. And, like, these days, like, back in the day, back in our day, there wasn't a whole lot of, like, really good tasting options for, like, dairy-free ice cream. Yeah,
that's true.
And now there's all sorts of stuff like that's really, really good.
That's true. You can vary it quite a bit. You're like, now I'm moving on to a coconut-based one. Now I'm on almonds.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, wow. I have a preference between, like, the soy milk-based ice cream or the cashew milk-based ice cream, you know? Like,
I picture in a competitive eating contest, and you're like, oh, but here's my rider. I can only have certain flavors.
I wonder if there was, like, any scientific study on how filling different like bases are. And I wonder if that would be like considered a
for ice creams in
performance enhancing ice cream eating.
I'm sure.
Oh, you're not filling yourself up so as much.
Yeah, I'm well, it's still the same amount of calories, I think.
I don't actually know that I believe that to be true. I'm just wondering. I
mean, cashew milk and like coconut milk are still crap tons of calories, and almond milk isn't that much less.
Well, and I feel like strategically you would be eating fast enough that the filling nature wouldn't hit you mentally until beyond the point.
Till you're sick, yeah.
Yeah, until it's too late.
Till you're going to regret it.
Also, competitive eaters train, right? So it'd be great. You want to pick something that you want to train on.
I don't want a competitive eat, I guess, is my answer. If I had to, it would be cookies. In the same vein as Chris's idea. I just love cookies. I mean, we have... we had cookies in preparation for the hurricane. We had hurricane cookies, and we ate them all before the hurricane showed up. So we had to make them. I say we, like, I probably accounted for half of it because I was
really like, we ate all the cookies.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep.
I like that hurricane cookies is a thing. I think hurricane cookies should be like just a universal thing. Whether or not the hurricane is going to affect you, you should just go out and get some hurricane cookies.
Well, good news. There's one way out in the Atlantic that's not going to affect anybody. So we better make cookies.
Yeah. Like, I'm going to go make some cookies out of solidarity.
Yeah.
Hmm. I have no idea what I could eat a lot of ice cream. So I feel like pretty confident in my ability to eat a lot of ice cream.
I mean, maybe we just do an episode where we like all eat ice cream.
And that's the
episode. I'd be fine with that.
Look, I'm willing to do a themed ice cream episode.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's 10 in the morning and I don't see a problem with this.
I could eat a lot of cookies also, but I don't know that I could eat more cookies than someone else
my body weight
in a race of cookie eating.
Well, that's the thing, like strategically, if I'm like, oh, if you're gonna pick like a classic food, like how many hot dogs could I eat? I don't know.
No, thank you.
Well, also like the competitive eating strategy for eating hot dogs is like you dunk the bun in water, you're not really even eating the hot dogs.
So. Yeah, I'm like the guy at the end who's like, can I get it Chicago style just for some variety?
This guy's not even trying.
Do you have any different kinds of mustard? I really like mustards. I want to try some different mustards.
What's the opposite of a ringer?
I just want to be like, seated lower.
More like
seated.
A seat filler.
Yeah.
I just want a really nice hot dog with some like artisanal mustard.
And, like, tie on a bib slowly and scratch. Everybody else is like, ah.
I don't think
foot long dogs though, do they? They do it with standard length hot dogs.
Yeah. At that point, it's not competitive eating. It's just eating.
It's just a meal.
I know, but it's a free hot dog, so.
it's basically like all you can eat buffet of hot dogs, except timed.
Yeah. So like one. I'm pretty confident I can hit that number in the time they have set up.
They have a poutine eating contest and I think the world championship was in Toronto last summer. I feel like I don't remember the like how much the
winner. Why is it always stuff that's totally going to give, like, would totally give you indigestion on a good day anyway?
Anyway, yeah. And they measured the end result in like kilo. It was just like, it was a lot too much for cheese.
You didn't go to like watch it, did you?
No, I didn't. Although
I don't know that I would want to watch that either.
That's how I feel about all eating competitions.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily the food. It was just the,
I'd want to see someone who's like super good at it, like Joey Chestnut or Kobayashi or one of the like head competitive eaters. I'm showing my hand way too much as far as like, I read an article. The people that make it look effortless, just like anything. I think that's always fascinating in any sport.
Yeah, it's like the top of the, I don't know, it's on ESPN, so probably. the people are like the top of their game. Yeah, I agree. They do make it look like they have the fundamentals down so good that they make it look easy.
It doesn't look like they're eating hot, like 100 hot dogs.
That's true.
I still can't. I just can't. I can't get past the just mental headspace of.
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the forum on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.